Suspension and debarment officials have been cracking down on government vendors that are out of compliance for what sometimes seem like minor missteps, and vendors are also apt to criticize what they see as a wave of regulations. Adele Elia is a consultant and former chief ethics and compliance officer at USIS. She spoke with Federal News Radio's Jason Miller at the 34th Annual Government Contract Management Symposium about why compliance seems harder now than ever before.
The compliance programs for government contractors now have to be a lot more robust. They have to be a lot more integrated than perhaps they were expected to be 5 years ago. There's a broader scope. There's more sense that there needs to be disclosure to the government. We have a couple of new regulations that promote that. There's more sense that we need to be investigating and working very closely with our third parties. We're more responsible for their behavior. There's some regulations that tie into that. So over the past few years, especially the past 2 years, we've seen quite a move towards that compliance program having a much broader set of responsibilities and candidly being harder to do.
Do you get a sense that that's because there's been problems in the past, or is there another reason? Is it just part of the evolution, or the pendulum has swung? Is there a reason?
I think it's a natural evolution. I don't think it's so much a pendulum as over time, more instances have come into play. Regulations have followed from those, and we've begun to realize that just trying to tactically look at every new regulation and apply a procedure for that, the next one, apply a procedure for that, is really cumbersome, it's not efficient, and it doesn't work terribly well. So compliance programs have matured, and so we see more in the press about them, we see more issues, but we also see an approach that is, how do we sweep everything into something that's coherent? It makes sense for the employees. And it isn't just potentially adding another and another and another to a list of things, because after a while people tune that out.
And I think that if you talk to some contractors and some contract associations who support them, they would tell you it feels like that this administration specifically is just piling on. It's hard to say from an outsider's perspective whether that's the case, because obviously a lot of the vendors will say, well, anything more is too much. And a lot of the administration people will tell you, well, why don't they want to be held accountable? What's their reason? How do you as the compliance officer find that bright balance to satisfy both needs?
A lot of the new regulations come out. In principle, they're not bad. You know, the notion of making sure there aren't counterfeit parts is not a bad notion. It's the implementation that's the challenge. So as a compliance professional, what you tend to be doing is figuring out how to adhere to the rules, but really get the message right and have it done in a way that it supports all of the different rules. It's just sometimes hard to deal with the logistics of how it's actually been put out.
This is heading down a path of a lot of contractors now being fearful of that suspension and debarment for going maybe the wrong way, not purposefully, but accidentally or unknowingly, and then they face the suspension and debarment issue. How big of a fear is that in the government contracting community?
It's a big fear. There's definitely been more action. It's something where folks' risk awareness is higher, as it should be. But I think the positive thing is that the SDO community has matured as well. And so when the SDO community, if you're in a situation, they're looking at a compliance program, they're not actually expecting 8 million individual trainings about individual rules. They are looking at the program holistically. So suspension and debarment officials will ask about your values messaging. You know, how are you teaching employees to speak up? How are you embracing employees who do? And those questions apply across a lot of regulations. So they look at you, and when they're talking about present responsibility or your integrity, they're looking at those principles. They're not just looking at, give me an example of module 6 of your training program, and is it 6 minutes or 22 minutes? The risk is there, but at the same time, they can actually understand it if you're trying to do a genuine comprehensive program, and they can see that.
And do you think that the suspension debarment officials have also evolved as the compliance requirements have increased? Their understanding that, one, they can't look at everything, but two, if they try to look at everything, they'll end up just suspending and debarring every company, and then who's going to be left to do the work in the general sense?
The suspension departments, I think, as a whole, have improved in their ability to understand what it's like for a corporate compliance official. They've also done a lot of outreach. They go on panels in commercial settings. They go to industry events, and they try to express what it is they're looking for so that we as compliance officers know what that is. But also they listen. We're in a situation where we're talking about the difficulty of implementing, for example, some of the third-party rules. It's really, really hard to control suppliers, two or three vendors down the chain. The SDO community is listening to that message and thinking, okay, I get that that's very hard. So when I evaluate your program, I understand that's a particularly hard thing to do, and I'm going to look at how you've approached it. So their outreach and their willingness to listen to the challenges we have, I think, is another really good side of how things are developing.
I'm speaking with Adele Alia, a former Chief Ethics and Compliance Officer at USIS and GTSI, and now a consultant. I'm Jason Miller from the 34th Annual Government Contract Management Symposium, sponsored by the National Contract Management Association. One of the other big issues is around what goes into a good compliance program. I think a lot of vendors have gone down this path over the last, well, again, we'll call it maybe the last decade, where they've had to really relook and redo their compliance program, what goes into it, how to make sure it gets to a broad audience. Give me, from your perspective, what works well?
I think the basics, pretty much everyone knows what they are. There's the guidelines, the FAR covers those. So you have to have some prevention, you have to screen employees and teach them, you have to have some kind of monitoring, and then you have some genuine response if something goes wrong. So a way for people to report things, especially anonymously, a good investigation procedure that you apply consistently and as independently as possible, and then genuine consequences. So I think everyone knows that. I think the two pieces that people really have to add that are probably, you know, the things that maybe in the last 3 or 4 years have made a difference is, number one, absolutely this focus on ethics and values. It's not just a compliance message anymore. It has to do with how we expect you to behave as an employee, even in minor everyday circumstances, because that's really what drives behavior overall. And that's what people rely on when they're trying to address the competing business priority and the culture of our company. There really needs to be something that's ingrained into everything you do. So that's the number one thing that I think people have to make sure they have in their program. And then the second thing is resources. In the past, it was probably sufficient, even at a small and mid-sized contractor, to assign ethics and compliance as a second duty of someone else. Now that's really hard to do. You'd have to be a pretty small government contractor to not have a full-time person. And the reason is that there are so many urgent things to do that if it's somebody's second role, it never gets done. A colleague of mine said the other day, you know, you never have a code of conduct emergency, and you don't. But unfortunately, that means you never deal with refreshing your code of conduct if it's always second to something else. So I think today you really have to look at a full-time resource. It can be at a variety of levels. It can report into HR or contracts or legal, a bunch of different places. But you really have to have someone who's accountable for making sure the program is doing what it needs to do and running smoothly every day, and is the person that's going to be your escalation if something's going wrong.
And I think it's very similar to what we're seeing with inside the government around privacy. All of a sudden, there's this move to create a privacy council, have someone who's not just a senior executive in charge of privacy, but somebody who will have the quote-unquote privacy officer title full-time. I think the resources point is very much key, and I think that gets overlooked a little bit too often, probably for a lot of companies and a lot of agencies. When you find yourself in hot water, if you're a company, and unfortunately maybe you've had some experience with this with some of the companies you worked at, what do you do? I mean, for me, it's always just tell the truth, right? Because I've seen too many people who lie, and they get in more hot water. But the truth is not always black and white.
I think the truth is the start, but really it's more than the truth. There's an aspect of transparency. The SDOs have said very often, they want to see commitment from a company. They want to see transparency from the get-go. And one of the most common things that they find disconcerting is if the first meeting with the SDO, in comes a fleet of lawyers. The CEO's not there. Top management are not there. They have in-house counsel and outside counsel who are going to come brief them. And the SDOs look at that and say, why isn't your CEO horrified that there could have been an alleged misuse of the trust that we placed in you, potentially taxpayer monies? Why are you sending a bunch of lawyers? And there's absolutely a role for the legal team, but they want to see the CEO's commitment. So if you have to fly in your global CEO to meet with them in that first meeting, you do it. You don't save it for later. You make sure that that's the first impression they get, is that the company is as concerned about this possible problem, even if it turns out not to have been an actual problem, it's an allegation and it hasn't turned out to be substantiated. They want to see the commitment. They want to see the attention at the top level. So not only is it a tell the truth and transparency, it's that level of commitment. And I would say the number one thing is get the CEO on a plane, and nobody else is good enough.
What's the opposite advice to agencies or government when it comes to ethics and compliance as they're working with contractors?
I think just listening to how difficult it is to do sometimes.
The implementation, right?
Implementation is not easy, and especially with some of the newer regulations, they haven't been through the mill yet, and either we as compliance officers haven't found a clever way to do it, or it's extraordinarily costly, and we're trying to figure out an efficient way to do it. So it's important, I think, for the oversight authority to listen to the intent and the plan, and not perhaps jump to the conclusion that it can't be that hard to do, because sometimes it really is. I have a colleague who worked in government for a while and then came out and did compliance. And one of his comments was, I used to see things in agreement and think that couldn't be that hard to do. And then I came into industry and tried to do it and realized it's really hard to do some of it. And, you know, one word in an agreement may not seem like a lot to the official. Just go ahead and include those people. But then when you try to interpret it on the contractor side, it's like, so am I going to have to go train this extra 10,000 people who don't actually do any work? They're just supporting my facility. And those types of things can be really knotty issues to work out, especially in a difficult situation, because sometimes the government's not inclined to believe that you're working entirely on good faith. And so you're genuinely trying to do the right thing, but reasonably. And so it's important, I think, for the government to try and listen to the message. And if someone says it's hard to do, it might actually be really hard to do.
Adele Elia is a consultant and former chief ethics and compliance officer at USIS. Speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller, you can share this interview with your colleagues by going to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and clicking on Share with Friends.